This is August 18th, 2014, and we are at the Amelia Island Museum of History at 233 South 3rd Street in Fernandina Beach, Florida. Today we are interviewing Miss
Melba Jones Taylor, and I was born in Brunswick, Georgia, and my birthday is August 9th, 1922.
Okay, and?
I'm Jean Arnold Smith. We came to Fernandina in 1946. I was born in Shannon, Georgia, December 1st, 1934.
Okay, and my name is Phyllis Davis, and I will interview these two lovely ladies on behalf of the Amelia Island Museum of History. And with me is Kayla Morris, an intern for the museum. And now we will get started. So just to kind of start, Ms. Melba, tell us a little bit about what you remember, maybe the earliest thing you remember from Fernandina.
Well, I can go back till I was about 3 years old, and I remember that we had a bus here, and I was missing, and I had took my little suitcase, and I'd gone back down to the bus station, and I was going back to Brunswick, Georgia. And then when I grew older, my grandparents were jail keepers here at this jail, and the front part of the jail was in front of where the museum is now. And my grandparents lived on the right-hand side. The kitchen was on the left-hand side. And in the hall was a great big old steel door with a little bars on it. And they had a great big old key that you kept that door locked all the time, because the Afro-American ladies and the white ladies were downstairs, and they were together. The Afro men were upstairs on the left side, and the white men were on the right-hand side. And years later, they separated it somehow, and the ladies were upstairs on the right-hand side. But the men would stand at the windows, and then they would yell at the people that came by. And if they wanted cigarettes or something, they'd yell and tell them to bring them, you know, whatever they wanted. And my grandmother, she was a cook. And they had, the prisoners had beans and rice and tea every day, and biscuit, and sometimes cornbread. And at that time, Youngblood was sheriff. And he would get the moonshine stills, and he'd bring the stills and put them on the left-hand side out there on the vacant lot. And they had brown sugar. And my grandmother used that brown sugar from the stills to sweeten the tea. And then my grandmother and them had chickens in the back of the jail. And I had some bad little cousins, and in front there was Grandmama and them had those little bell, little tiny red peppers, and my cousins told me, the boys told me, said, eat some of those peppers. But I ate some of those peppers, and oh, they just burned my mouth so bad. And so they said, well, if you go and get back there on the roost where the chickens are and stick your tongue out, the hot will come out. And Mama and them, when they went to look for me, I was back there on the chicken roost with my tongue out. And so I would help my grandpa take the downstairs to the ladies. I would help him. He would take the tray, and I'd pass it to the ladies down. And back then, they didn't have very much crime. Mostly they were arrested for being drunk or something like that. We didn't have crime. And Fernandina has always been integrated. It's always, as far as I know, we've never had any disturbances. One time when Joe Lewis won the fight, downtown Mr. Livingston's had a radio. And my father-in-law, he had also he had a radio shop and bicycle repair shop on 3rd Street. And he would open up the doors of the shop, and then they would turn it up, and everybody was something going on, they'd go down there and sit on the bench and listen. Mm-hmm. But when Joe Lewis won that fight, the Afro-American men were down there on the sidewalk, and you couldn't get by because they were so elated that Joe Lewis had won that fight.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
I remember Mr. Saylor's bicycle shop because my kids, all four of them, would ride their bicycles, or if it couldn't ride it, then they walked it down to Mr. Saylor. Mm-hmm. And he would fix it, and most of the time, no charge.
Yeah. Oh, goodness. Yeah. Wow.
How long was, or when did they move to, and that was the Florida house that where he lived next to, wasn't
No, he didn't live in the Florida house.
Next to
He got the Florida house, Miss Kelly and them owned the Florida house, and they lost it on account of the taxes. Mm-hmm. And he was able to get the Florida house, and he put it in Sammy's name. Mm-hmm. And we stayed in it when we got married, you know. Mm-hmm. And Sammy stayed in it when he was young. But I don't know what year that they came. He worked for the railroad, and Miss Saylor had a little flower shop.
Yeah.
And she fixed corsages, and then she sold plants and everything. Mm-hmm. But Mr. Saylor worked for the railroad, but he got where he had an appendectomy, and he wasn't able. He had to retire, so he mm-hmm. came on to Fernandina and took up where his grandfather had mm-hmm. His grandfather.
Where did they move from?
St. Petersburg, Florida. Oh. Yeah, that was where Sammy was born. Mm-hmm. But he came back and forth all of his life. His grandmother kept him, so mm-hmm. he was here a long, long time.
Mm-hmm. And y'all were married when?
In 1941.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. We were married 73 years in January. And he was in the hospital at the time. Well, we married in the 30th of January. We've been 73 years.
73 years.
Yeah, and he was in the hospital at that time. Mm-hmm. And Joni Reed went to visit him, and he told her to go get something for me. And she went and bought a red silk flower rose. Mm-hmm. And so I had misplaced it, and I found it. So I have that.
And that was January of this year, or was it last year?
This year. He would have been 96. He died March 13th, and May the 12th, he'd have been 96 years old. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now had a nice, good, long married life.
But my grandmother, she owned 4th Street. Well, first she had across from the post office. Mm-hmm. It was a great big old house, and they said that my sister said it's a painting at one of the lawyers' offices down where Allen's is upstairs. Mm-hmm. Of that, it's a two-story house. Mm-hmm. And my grandmother had a boarding house there, and she boarded the county commissioners there. Mm-hmm. And then years later, she had a boarding house on 4th Street there. Mm-hmm. On the corner was a great big old building called the Globe House. Mm-hmm. And they used to have the Holiness Church, and Mr. Drury was the preacher there. Mm-hmm. Before that, it was a furniture store. Mm-hmm. And Hester had the furniture store. But when my daughter was, we were living in the Florida house at the time, and we had an apartment downstairs in the back. And she was sick, and I was up rocking her. And I looked out the window, and I saw the flame over on 4th Street there. And I woke Sammy up because he was on a midnight shift, and it was getting time for him to go to work. And that whole building went up in fire.
Mm. Which building was this that went up?
It was on Fort. It was called the Globe Building.
The Globe Building.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. But my grandmother, before that, she had a boarding house in the house next door. Mm. And then Cavicles had a burger. Years later, he had a little burger place in there. But before that, it was a shoe shop. Mm. And then that shoe shop moved downtown. And I forget who the man was that was over that shoe shop.
Was Cavicles Burger place On 4th Street?
4th Street, yeah. Street. It was next to...
that's where that little Espanya...
Oh,
yeah,
Rosen
is now.
That's interesting about the boarding house, because in those days there were lots of boarding houses. Miss Ruth Thomas had one on the corner of Ash and Third.
Yeah, but that was later on. This is when I was a child. Because my grandmother, she had the little butter dishes, and we thought they were tea sets. And we've always wanted some of those little butter dishes. Of course, we didn't get them, but we wanted them because we thought they were tea sets, you know. But it was it's lots of history that has gone on in Fernandina, you know.
And the Florida House, that's where Ulysses S. Grant, so I've read, stayed overnight or would be there. So it has lots of history there.
Miss Taylor, she, on the downstairs on the left-hand side there, is a, she opened up in there and put cots. They had the horse patrol at the beach during the Second World War, you know. And soldiers or sailors, they just come in, and she charged them 50 cents a night. And they would just, sometimes they'd pay her and sometimes they wouldn't. But they stayed there, you know, during that, during the war. And then we had a lookout thing at the beach, too, for the planes and things. And people took turns spotting, trying to spot the ships and the airplanes.
Things like that.
What was it like in Fernandina during World War II? I mean...
Well, I don't remember too much about... racing. We had the racing things, and you got the racing stamps, and you could only get so much gas, and you could only get so many, and they issued the little book, and and then you would get some little... And I've got one of the little red things that you got back in change, you know, when you took one of your coupons. And you could only get so many tires or something like that.
Butter and sugar was limited.
And Ike Shiver's brother, I think it was Piggly Wiggly, when it was downtown across from the palace. And the regular customers, when they were during World War II, when you went in, like Imogene said, it was stuff was short, like different things, like a washing powder and things like that. And the Tiffins girl was married, I can't think of her first name, but she married Ike Shiver's brother, who was the manager of the store. And Geiger, Clarence Geiger, he worked down there, and Ike Shiver worked there, and Myrtle Tiffins worked there, and my cousin worked there, Gloria Smith, she worked there in the meat department.
And that was the only grocery store, probably.
No, we had Mr. Matthews at A&P across the street, left over there, and he would deliver groceries, you know. Back, this is when I was young, and they did deliver the groceries on the bicycle. And then the Western Union was across the street, and Miss Swim was over it, and she went to the First Baptist Church, and she had a little car, and it had a rumble seat. And if you stayed for church, back then everybody didn't have a car like, you know, people do now. And she would take the ride you home after church. And so nearly every Sunday, the kids all, the girls would say, you know, for that. And, but anyway, on the at the Piggly Wiggly there, they would keep sacks, and they would have, if you were a regular customer, and they didn't ask you if you wanted it, they just charged it to you, and you never knew what you were going to get in that sack until you got home. And we had an insurance man, Mr. Russell, and Mr. Russell, he would find out. Mrs. Sanders had a grocery store on the corner of Ash and 4th Street, I think it is, 4th Street, and he went in there, and I think it was pork chops or mayonnaise she had gotten in, and he wanted some. And she said, "Mr. Ruthers," she said, "I have to save this for my special customer mm-hmm. that trade with me all the time." But he'd go from store to store. He was an insurance man and try to get some of
the... Was that his wife was a school teacher?
Yeah, Miss yeah. Russell. And when Miss Russell, I think she was Miss Clyde.
Yeah.
She Benfield, I believe, was her last name. I'm not sure on the last name sure. now. I think it was Benfield. Well, when she came from, I think, a pretty well fixed family. And oh, she dressed so pretty, and everybody had run downstairs in the hall. And when she'd come down, we'd all stand there and say, "Look at her." You know, that was before she got married.
The teachers had, some of them had really special influence on us, the way they dressed and the pins they wore and things like that.
Well, she told me one time, I was telling her how much I appreciated her, and I was down at the 10-cent store. She said, "Melba, you go home and write me a letter." She said, "Because when you tell me, I'll sometimes forget. But if I got the letter, got it written down." But we had a movie. We really had a small mall downtown because we had on the corner of 3rd and Center Street, we called it, was a service station. And my brother-in-law years later ran that service station. Then next to that service station was a Sheik Gus. His name was Gus. He had a shoe shop. And then before Miss Sanders moved her store, she had a grocery store in there. Then there was Sewer's drugstore. And next to that was Charlie Cash Grocery. And Charlie Cash Grocery, he would cater to the shrimp boats. And he would stay open till 12 o'clock at night or would get a call from a shrimp boat, and he would open that store up and, you know, deliver the groceries. Mm-hmm. And then it was a restaurant in there by Mr. Simon. They had a restaurant there. And then on the corner was Grunwald's jewelry store. And then back, where, back coming back to you, back toward the river there, when I was growing up, the hardware store was there, and they used to fix some nets there. And one time during the Second World War, some of those nets caught on fire, but they were able to get it out. And I've got a picture somewhere where it shows the smoke, you know, from that. And then we had a movie theater, and the Whites from that movie theater. And then we had a, let's see what we had next door to that.
Was that where the furniture store, Mr. Melton? Was that in that block? No, Melton.
It was A&P. No, so, Mr. Peace. Mr. Peace had that store. And he had sores on his legs. And he would sit out there with short pants and in front of that store. And I can't tell if something I don't know. I'm going to tell it anyhow. If they make a complaint, y'all can blame me. He sold all kinds of drinks and everything. And one night my father-in-law went over there to that store. And Mr. Peace had opened, somebody didn't finish their drink, and he had poured that drink in there and corked it and sold it. So needless to say, and then, of course, Fritz Holbein, at one time, in one of the books, it had Fritz Holbein over where the Standard Hardware was, but I don't remember that. I remember Mr. Holbein being across the street there. And then we had the telephone office, the steps, where Robinson's is now, is a little stair thing there. And Dr. Dickens and Dr. Bruton were upstairs. And then it was Al and Hilder had a beauty shop to the back of the back of it. And Dr. Rutherford had an office up there on the front. And then Young Hall had an office on the right-hand side. But the men would go and get the hair fixed at nighttime when nobody would see them. I worked at the telephone office, and Mr. Oxley, I always thought he had natural wavy hair, but he got permanent. So that was something. And then when Dr. Bruton was interning, his wife was in college, and she would go down when she'd come home on holidays. She'd go downstairs there and wait for him to come down, you know, and she'd just laugh and about it and everything. And I used to ride my bicycle and to work, and that was doing first part of the World War II. I mean, and some of the sailors would, or the servicemen would take my bicycle and ride up and down, you know, and I'd have to stand there and wait to get my bicycle back. And then we had a number of restaurants downtown, and then we had a fruit stand down there, and we had a train. We had a little train, and we called it the dump train. And you could catch that train down at the depot down here, mm-hmm. and ride to Jacksonville and then make your connection. So we rode at one time and called it to go to Fort Pierce, and I got sick and I threw it up on the train. So I don't know if my mama had to clean it up or not. But in front of the depot there, they had those old-fashioned red roses. I've got some of them in my house. So, I mean, I didn't get them from down there.
Yeah.
But they had those in front there. I remember that. And then we had the bus line, too. Bank Duncan had the bus line. And the Miller boys, Tommy and...
Willie,
Tommy and Willie, and then Burgess,
Buddy
Burgess. Yeah, he worked for Mr. Van Duncan too. So we had all we needed.
Yeah. When did they stop running the bus? Because it seems like I kind of remember the being a bus.
When I was in high school, still Mr. Mac Duncan still had the bus line. Mm-hmm. But before the kids got cars and things, you walked to the beach, and it was kind of, I don't know if it was shell or what, but they had oleanders planted either side there. And of course they had the pavilion out there, and then they had the restaurant. And I can't think of what the lady...
Blue Seas.
Huh?
Blue Seas, was that it?
Well, the lady, it was called Steakhouse. I don't know what, I can't remember what the people's name was. But her brother owned that big thing down at St. Petersburg. And I can't think of her name right now that run that.
Well, was the trolley... during your time?
No, the trolley went on Beach Street, and back of our lot where we live now, it was some of the rail down. It goes the Greenway where they open up Beach Street down to the creek. That's where that trolley went through.
Right.
No, that was years when Sammy's grandmother and them were still living, and Charlie went into the beach. But they had a little platform in front of the pavilion, and Jerry Moore Robinson's. She was a jitterbug queen. She went because she lived at the beach, and every night she'd go down there, and they'd have the jitterbug in front of there. And then Mr. Moore had the big grocery store and the dance over there. And all of his kids worked in that store.
Yeah.
They really had to work in that store. But that was entertainment then.
Right.
And you could go to the fort, and it didn't cost you anything.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where all the young people went down and smooched. It was one couple every time. We were married, Sam and I were married, but we'd run around. And it was one couple, and every time we went, we'd ride down to the fort, they were down there. But both of them dead. down.
So they won't hear what we're saying.
They won't hear what we're saying now. No, they won't. But it was a lot. So, I mean, it was fun growing up.
Yeah.
You didn't have all this things that they have now. In the high school, when they opened it up, we didn't have a gym or anything. When we were in 12th grade, we played dodgeball. And Helen Dubos, who was in the grade with me, she was the one that was the best dodging. And that's all, I mean, we did. I mean, we didn't do all this kind of stuff these kids do nowadays.
What year did you graduate?
1940.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, when you first started school, was it the one on Atlantic Avenue?
Yeah, when it first opened
on
up.
On 10th Street?
Yeah, I went all the way through there. Yeah.
Oh, on the main, on the,
yeah,
the
Atlantic
school
Avenue
board office.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I started out with Miss Graham.
Oh.
Now, I don't tell about Miss Graham.
Everybody remembers her.
Yeah, Miss Graham. But they wouldn't allow you to do what she did. It was some of them, both on tongue, and I can't think of who the other ones were. Some of them was Afro. I mean, they were a Greek descent or something, and they didn't behave in the school. And Miss Graham was taking, she'd bam their head on the desk, and then she had us paddle, and she'd do their hands like that. And I mean, they wouldn't put up with that stuff now.
Well, she was our sixth grade teacher.
Yeah, yeah.
When we came here in 46.
No, but she was first grade teacher. Baby Ray was a boy. That Baby Ray thing that it would, I can't remember all the things, and keep repeating Baby Ray was a boy, and Baby Ray did this, and Baby Ray did that. She never did bop me, but she did to some of those boys, and I mean, they would call that.
Well, by the time she got to sixth grade,
yeah,
she had a hose, a piece of, to me it looked just like a piece of hose pipe. And it stayed in the bosom. And she would bring that out and wrap them.
Yeah.
Just like
that.
Oh,
my gosh.
That's the truth.
You behaved.
The sixth grade teacher was Mrs. Golfin. And Mrs. Golfin's husband was invalid. And she would send, he had seashells and things, and we would walk from the school, the children that behaved and made good grades. She would send us to her house where Mr. Golfin was in the bed, and we made these little things, and I've got one of them at home that my sister had made out of the seashells. But they wouldn't allow you to do that now. Mm-hmm. And then Miss Cario, she would, she lived over on 10th Street, 10th Street. And she would send me at lunchtime to her house to pick up her lunch.
Oh.
And I'd go pick up her lunch and bring it back to her. And I mean, they wouldn't allow you to do it, that now.
And they wouldn't let every student do it then. You were special.
Yeah, I was. I mean, I minded.
Yeah.
But I know if I didn't mind when I got home, I would start minding.
You'd get double.
Surely would, yeah.
One of her relatives was my second grade teacher.
Oh.
Miss Gresham.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wasn't that right?
Yeah. She married Hewitt, Elton Hewitt.
Yeah.
Years later. Yeah. Yeah, and Alice was a second grade teacher. And then Miss Hernandez, she was fifth grade teacher, and Clarice Hernandez, and her daddy was a preacher at our church, Mr. Herring. And her son, Tommy Hernandez, was in service, and he was in Hawaii, and he was in a motorcycle accident. And the people in Fernandina back then, people didn't have lots of money and everything, and the school didn't pay a lot. And so they didn't know whether he was going to live or not. And so anyway, they took up money, and Mr. Hernandez was able to go to Hawaii. And then Tommy came back, and Beano Roberts came, and he took care of Tommy, and then built the, I don't know if the government built him a house or who built Tommy, but it's a house on the right-hand side going to the beach there, right near the creek. I don't know just exactly if it's the one right on the creek or not. But,
I think it is, the great cat.
Yeah, yeah, and that's Beno Roberts took care of Tommy until he passed away.
But he was able to accomplish a lot, even in that, it was a paraplegic first, I think, then quad later. But he was on the hospital board.
Really?
He had a voice, and it was good, and he was well-liked in spite of his disability. And his sister, Rita, was in my class at school. We graduated together.
Yeah, yeah.
Miss Clarice Hernandez was one of our favorite teachers, too. A math teacher. And interesting, when you said at the church, it was at First Baptist Church.
Oh.
And this year we're celebrating our 155th anniversary of Baptist work here on the island since 1859.
Wow.
Well, what was the man's name that was running for something and he brought the monkey to our church?
Mr. Pope.
Huh?
Mr. Pope.
Wasn't okay, he was running for something in the city.
I think the sheriff.
Something. Anyway, he carried that monkey around. He came to our church and they wouldn't let him come in. So he went around to the Presbyterian church and they let him go in with the monkey. So that was something. Oh, and two, I don't know if it's Foremost Dairy or what, but they used to advertise the ice cream, and I'm not sure now if it was Foremost, but it was one of the ice cream companies from Jacksonville, and they would come down every so often to the courthouse then and put a platform off, and I think it was Virginia Ada. I'm not sure on the name, on it, and then she tap danced. And they'd have this little program and everything. Of course, everybody would go. And then after it was over, they'd give you some ice cream. And then Goodyear had this great big old tire. And they would come ever so often. Oh, it's a huge tire. And I wasn't supposed to, if we went any place, even in the block where we lived, we had to tell our mother where we were going to be. Well, my mother called me, and I didn't answer. I had gone down to the block to look at the tire. I got the tire when I got back. But little things like that. And then we had an Afro man, a colored man, and it was called Six-Toed Fred. And Six-Toed Fred couldn't wear any shoes because he had six toes on his feet. So the people would tell their children, if you don't behave, Six-Toed Fred's going to get you.
Oh,
they did. And then it was Afro-American, and I never have been able to find out what his name was, but he was little like this. His name was Pino. He wore a hat like that. And every time they had an Afro-American funeral, he had a lunch. And he would go and he would stay for that whole funeral. And all different people I've asked, it was Mrs. Williams that was in the hospital, out of quality care. She said, all I know was Pino, and nobody in Fernandina that, knew about Pino.
Are you saying Pino, like
P-I-N-O is what he was doing. He wore this old brown hat. And he wasn't but about this tall, and he carried his lunch with him, and he'd go and sit all the time because they, and Mr. Lewis, that American Beach, he is the one that put the telephone line, he paid for a telephone line to go down to American Beach, and they used to, the highway, people, the Afro-Americans from all over New York and everybody would come to Fernandina, and that highway was during the summer, just one bus after the other, came, and they had their own beach down there.
All going to American Beach.
Yeah,
beautiful
American Beach.
And it's been good that they've been able to keep it.
Well,
I have a question, because I've heard this story, and I heard that, I think it was Sheriff Youngblood, that one time the KKK was trying to come onto the island.
KKK was on the island.
Oh, were they?
Yes, because Mrs. I'm sure it's all right to tell it. Leroy McKee's mother is the one that washed the uniforms for the KKK. And one time, they hadn't paid the bill for the electric. And Mrs. McKee, she lived in Old Town, and by the tower there. And it was the KKK was going to have a meeting, and she was supposed to iron the uniforms. She had washed them, but she didn't have anything to iron them with. And Mr. Jones, who worked for the utility company, says, "Now I'm going to connect it up long enough for you to iron the KKK uniforms, and then I'll cut it off, but don't you tell anybody." So a few years back, Leroy told my husband about it, said his mother, but we were coming out of church when it was either one Sunday night or one Wednesday night. The KKK was marching down Lotchaway Street. Somebody said, "Oh, there goes Sam Swearingen. He belonged to the KKK." They said, "How did you know?" They said, "By the shoes."
Should have hit his shoes too.
Don't wear the regular shoes when you're in that uniform.
And then I told the lady then about the it was the lady came and wanted to get something for him to tell her how much it's worth a while ago, but and she, it was a little bomb thing, and but down at the dock there, Mr. Jean, he had a place down there at the and his daughter married Victor Beckham, Anna, his daughter, and his son is still, I think his son's his grandson still lives on Fifth Street, I think, in the house where the Jeans used to live. And they brought up a bomb in the net, and it dropped, and it blew Mr. Janina's leg off.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Was it a bomb from...
I don't know what it was from. It was years and years ago when I was a kid. Because I asked what happened, and Sammy told me, said, that's what happened to Mr. Janina's, you know, to his leg and everything.
Could have been World War II or Civil War or whatever.
It was before that, because when I was a kid.
Maybe World War I, maybe.
Because Miss Janina, his wife died years and years ago, and he got a new wife from, I guess, Italy, and they bought all this spaghetti and all kinds of stuff, and they had kept it in the garage back there. And then we had a little lady that lived on Fifth Street, and her name was Mrs. Plum. And she sewed for all of the people. And Mrs. A.S. Allen is one of the ones that she sewed, Mrs. Allen's clothes and everything. And then she had apartments that she, rooms that she rented out to the service band, too.
The A.S. Allen department store was the store.
Yeah.
I don't know about how far back, but I know when we came here.
Ever since I was little. Well, they had the latest dresses on one side and the jewelry. And then in the middle part of the store, they had the materials, and they had the men's clothes, and they had the shoes, and then upstairs they had the bathing suits. And you went up, you know, and I stayed with my aunt who was a teacher, and so the first bathing suit I guess I owned, they weren't these bikinis either, they were bathing suits. Of course, I had to go up there and try it on. My aunt, she had to approve of it and everything. But they had, the people that worked in that store were old, old people. And and they had worked there for years. And Miss Lockspeech worked there, and Juanita Campbell worked there, and Anna Mae Mack at Lambach worked there. Mr. Manusi, Mr. Manusi worked there, and then White. What was his first? Betty White's husband.
Herb White.
He worked there when he was a young boy. Uh-huh. And it was several older people that worked in there. Mr. Bourne worked in there. And another thing was the music. On Beach Street, Alice Nolan lived in a two-story house there, and her brothers played, I think they played trombone, and she played the piano. And then around the corner, Elizabeth Boren, she played the piano. And then on Beach Street on the right-hand side, Dorothy Brooks Walters, she played the piano. Then on your 6th Street on the left-hand side, the Ferreras, they all played. And you could go and down the street, and they would be playing that music during the daytime and everything.
Their practice sessions were
being heard. Yeah, the windows were open, and you could hear all that music. Yeah.
Well, was Elizabeth Bourne one of those that was in the First Baptist?
Yeah, she played the organ at our church, First Baptist Church. But one time it was Gigas, Paul Gigas. They lived on 6th Street on the right-hand side there. On the left off of Beach Street, but on the right hand side, and she had learned to drive the car, and a cat running in front, and she didn't want to hit the cat, and she hit the back of a Sturgis grocery store and knocked the side of the store, and they said, "Well, why did you do that?" She said, "Oh, I didn't want to kill the cat."
Mess up the property, but don't kill the cat. Did your husband, Mr. Saylor, did he have to go to war?
He volunteered. He volunteered, and he had a extension. He wouldn't have had to go, but he just volunteered. Yeah, he was on any Wichita.
Did you go with him to
I went to Atlanta when he was they sent him to Atlanta, and then they sent him to when he went overseas, they sent him to Alameda, California. And I went to Oakland and stayed, and Miss Taylor kept Beth, and stayed there till he went overseas. And they were building a convoy up in the Golden Gate, off of the Golden Gate Bridge there. And he said, "If I don't come home, one night we had a room at a boarding house, and he said, if I don't come home, I'm getting ready to go overseas." So he didn't come home. I knew, that he was getting ready to go overseas. But then I had to go over to San Francisco to get transportation back home. And they told him in Alameda I couldn't get transportation back home. And it was the yeoman just didn't want to fill out the orders. So I went over to the government building in San Francisco and went down. Of course, you had to be escorted, with the things with the guns on and everything, and they took me in and they said, "Sure, you can get, So I got transportation back home.
And you were all by yourself doing that, weren't
you? Yeah, yeah. Lordy, I wouldn't be, if I knew some of the things that goes on now, you would have got me on that train. I would have got on there.
Those were.
And then I had the train in New Orleans. We had to, they took us off the train, and we had to wait because they were putting the troops, some of the troops on the plane. And I had a berth, and somehow they sold it. And they put me back in a place where they sold the cocktails, I don't know, stuff like that and everything. And I told the conductor, I said, do you have any daughters? And he said, yeah. I said, well, you want your daughter sitting back there? And that? She said, no. I said, well, I'm not supposed to be back there either. So he found me a seat.
Yeah. Wasn't that good?
Yeah, that was good.
She is a remarkable woman to me. To be able to remember names and all of things like that is great. And she's always been one that was always color coordinated in what she wore. And when you were telling about Miss Russell, I said, well, maybe some of that rubbed off on you.
No, my aunt, she always wore her clothes, Aunt Alice Grisham. Yeah. She bought her clothes over at Maycoins and in Jacksonville. And so when she got rid of them, she gave them to my mama, and my mama was a good seamstress, and she would make my clothes. And Suzanne Davis one time, she said, it wasn't Suzanne Davis at that time, it was
Suzanne Hardy?
Yeah, Suzanne Davis Hardy. And she said, well, Beverly, where do you get your clothes? I said, my mama makes them. I didn't tell her they were secondhand. But mama did.
Designer clothes, you
know. Yeah, and Aunt Alice, she always said, on a rainy day, she said she'd always put red on. She said, because it calmed the kids down. You know, so I don't know if it calmed them down or not, but anyway, she wore red. But anyway, at the cemetery out there,
Boscobella?
Yeah, it was somebody from North Carolina, and she stayed with, we had two doctors. We had Dr. Umphress and a Dr. Bunker. And Dr. Umphress would always say, my. it was these people one time, and they were sick, and they lived down on South 7th Street there, in the house next to where Yvonne and them, where Dee Dee and them lived. It wasn't a brick house at that time, and they were sick. And so he bought a sack of groceries and took them there. And the lady looked at it, and he had a ham in there. And she said, Dr. Umphress, she said, we don't eat that kind of ham. And he went back to the office. He said, well, he wasn't going back there and take them anymore. I mean, he was giving it to him, you know, and told him. But anyway, Bobby, she was from North Carolina, and they were out at the Boscobella Cemetery. I think it's that far end down there. And they dug up some coins, some gold coins. And I guess you might have a record of something in here about it. But I can't remember exactly how much it was or anything. But I know that they dug those kids, dug up, if they were kin to her. And she stayed with Miss Tucker, who was a nurse for Dr. Bunker.
Well, when did Dr. Now his name slipped me.
Dr.
Lungerhauser.
It was years later that Dr. Lungerhauser came, because his office is back of across from the post office upstairs there.
Yeah.
And one time when Beth was little, Martha's husband had to go to Dr. Lungerhauser. And Beth always called him Gigi. And they came out, and it was a cast out there. And Beth was little, and then she started crying and said, it cut Gigi's leg off.
Oh,
But we had a real bad storm, and I was little. And I don't know what year it was or what. But anyway, everybody was evacuated to the post office. And my grandmother at that time, she had the restaurant on 4th Street there. And my daddy was on a boat, and he was an engineer on a boat. And my grandma, she got to crying that my daddy was going to be killed, you know, that he was going to get drowned, you know. But they had gone someplace, you know, where it was safe and anchored off where it was safe. But I always remember that, and I don't know what year it was or anything when they had that. And then we had that great big old storm that time where the Fernandina, I've got the paper at home, shows where, you know, the...
was that Dora?
Dora, Hurricane Dora?
64.
I don't remember what it was, but it was all on 8th Street and everything, and went all in the stores and everything.
Mm-hmm. The river came up almost to 3rd Street. We lived on North 3rd Street.
That
was bad.
And two, then they had a house out on the meet, we call it Amelia Road there, and they call it the tall house. It was built up off of there, and then they, I think the Chinaman and them had a, they grew celery mostly there. And then we had the little airport, the Havasick boy, he flew orchids in, and he landed in the marsh out there on the left-hand side somehow. And they, he got hired the girls to make orchids. I don't know if he flew them in special occasions or weddings or what. Mm-hmm. But...
we've come a long way. And there's still so much that we don't know and don't have records.
We didn't lock our doors or anything. No, we didn't lock the doors. Just went off and left them open and everything.
And walked, like you said, you walked to school. We lived at the corner of Gum and 8th, where the body shop is there now. Mm-hmm. Our restaurant was there.
No.
That's what we came to Florida, came here. My dad wanted to open a restaurant. He wanted it to be a vegetable stand, and then a little side part would be a sandwich shop. And my mother would do that, and my dad would do the groceries and the fruit. But her shop did better than the vegetables and the fruit, so the whole corner became Arnold's Drive-In.
Oh.
And we would walk from there to the school, which then was... what we call the school board office now.
Sure.
And rain or shine, sleet or snow.
We walked from 5th Street there, too. Mm-hmm. And they had the bogey plant. And they could talk about... some man had written an article about seeing the sawmill over in the mills. When you got to the bridge, he said, and you look over and you see the pulp mills and everything... Mm-hmm. He said, I mean, he was making fun of it, really. He had an article in the Fernandina paper about it. Mm-hmm. Well, when we were in Atlanta, when Sammy was in service, when we came home, it was the old drawbridge.
Yeah.
And when we got to the top of that drawbridge and we smelled that pogey plant, we knew we were home.
Yeah.
That had a distinctive smell, didn't it? I remember that.
Yeah.
Once you smell it, you didn't forget that.
That's true.
Yeah, we knew we were, you know, knew we were at home, you know.
We had, still have, but then had more kinfolks on my husband's side in Augusta, Georgia. And when they would come to visit, my Aunt Nell, she said, I can't stay here as long as we plan. I can't stand that smell. Said, no wonder you people are sick down here.
Well, Benson Riggin, he was, and Ted Zapp, Ted worked over, and that's where he met Connie Tringali, you know, because she worked over at the Pogue plant, too, in the office. And Benson, he would see us walking to school. He went to the Methodist church, but we knew Benson, and he would stop and offer us a ride to school, but we knew his car, and my sister and I, we would hide, because if you got in that car, you was going to smell like that pogey plant. But two, the electric company, I think the Nolans were over it. I mean, I think that was who. But it was on Atlantic Avenue, there on your right-hand side where the American Legion Hall, where the memorial is now. Mm-hmm. And they had the ice part where they made the ice at the end there, and then the other where the generated electricity was in front, and then they had a great big old rose garden in front mm-hmm. there. Mm-hmm. And my uncle, I had two uncles that worked there. And on the way to school, my uncle, lots of times he'd come out and get cut a rose or two and give it to me to take to my teacher. But the cut, where they cut the ice, mm-hmm. you know, we called it snow.
Yeah.
And the kids could crawl under there and get that snow, you know, and eat it on the way to school. And where that big old house that they built there on Atlantic Avenue now,
mm-hmm.
It was Afro lady, and her name was Jean. And she sold candy and different things in there mm-hmm. and articles. And all the kids used to stop there when they had a nickel or a dime and, mm-hmm. and then mm-hmm. Buy. And then Mr. Clyde Haddock had a grocery store on where the Afro-American church is right now. It was a two-story, was a grocery store there.
Was it on that same corner?
I think so. I believe it was. It was either on that corner or the
right
next corner.
It
was on the corner where, the Afro-American church, because the next corner is where Reverend DeVette lived in that big two-story house, you know.
Is it still there, that house?
No, it was tore down, I think, when the church was built. That church was built, I think. Yeah.
When did you start coming to First Baptist Church?
When I was about 5 years old. About 86 years.
Wow. Jeez. And you were telling me earlier you're the... You're the oldest member of the church now?
And Melba Shiver, and Melba Shiver, they got her down, but when she's 87. She became a member when she was baptized when she was 7. Well, I was baptized when I was 15, but I was older than what she was, and when I subtract it, we would be the same thing. But anyway, they got her down. But they got me down as the oldest Sunday school member. Mm-hmm. And Kathy,
you were attending Sunday school before, several years before you were baptized.
Yeah. And she was baptized when she was 7 years old. You know.
But they're neck and neck there.
But the Keystone Hotel, I mean, it was really nice. And when Miss Allen and them, A.S. Allen and them used to go, he had people or something, or he'd go to Canada for things. His family would go down to the Keystone Hotel and stay, you know. Mm-hmm. And then they'd go down to the restaurant and eat. I can't remember who owned that restaurant down there.
Was it?
But we had a bakery, too. And Mr. Goldstein was the owner of the bakery. And Mrs. Bowers worked in it.
Was it Bertie?
Her mother.
Oh.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
Bertie's mother worked in it. Well, it was this man that was a policeman. And he got drunk one night.
Uh-oh.
And he went... I'm not going to tell his name. June Tyson was one of the ones that was in the bakery. I mean, he was the one who made bread and everything. And so the man went in there, and they made a sheet of dough and rolled a man up in the sheet of dough.
Oh, my
and
goodness.
Laughed about it. That's
let
true.
Him wake up.
Roll up and go.
And his wife was a member of our church. I don't know if she knew anything about it now.
How about the little hat shop that was...
Miss Sophie. Miss Sophie. I don't know what Miss Sophie's last name was, but she did the... What do you call that stuff? Smocking and pico... something. You cut it, you did the little thing and like this, it was like that, and then you cut it and it made the little points on it.
Oh my.
Yeah. And then Carmen Stone bought it later, years later, and she had a hot shop in there.
Oh.
And I bought a little pink tam in there from Carmen.
The one I remember was Miss Thelma Rue.
Yeah, well, this was after Miss Sophie. Miss Sophie Sanders. To Miss Rue, and then Miss Rue sold it to Carmen Stone.
It was right there next door to what was Parton's, but now is Gauzeway, I think.
Yeah.
Okay. Right there. Mm-hmm. That was the cutest little shop and had the prettiest hats. Mm-hmm. This was in the 50s when we came, when I was a more older teenager. And the ladies wore hats a lot more than they did.
I like hats. But we had two drugstores. We had Washington's drugstore and Lockwood's drugstore. Mm-hmm. And years ago, when during Prohibition, I always thought Mr. Lockwood went down to the palace, but Betty Walsh told me it was Mr. Walsh that opened up the, it had the place down at the palace. Mm-hmm. I opened up Ice Cream Parlor down there, but I always thought it was Mr. Lockwood. But I was young, so and she's connected up with the Walsh family. Uh-huh. So. Mm-hmm. And then Mr. Bennett came to work for Mr. Walsh. And that was when he was single, and he was real nice looking, and everybody would go in there. And then that's when Lungenhauser was back, back during that period of time.
Mm-hmm. Walsh Drugstore was a neat little counter and booth place, too. Mm-hmm. And the kids from school, on lunchtime, we could go there and get Cherry Coke and something to
Well, who
eat.
Opened up the store near the school there? I mean, they had an ice cream thing in there, and it was across where the bakery is now, near the ballpark. Who opened up that one? And the kids went in there, and they acted over it. It wasn't Dr. Rutherford, was it, that opened it up?
No. Was Lacewell Lot Speech opened a Burger King there on that corner?
Yeah, no, this is an ice cream place and something.
I don't recall. That's interesting, because we have lots of ice cream places here now.
We do.
Two or three new ones that I noticed just recently.
Yep.
Well, let me ask you something about back on 3rd Street in the Florida House. The Souza family, do you remember?
Yeah.
Their son, or
Tony,
was in my graduating class. And was it just one house?
It was a yellow house. It was the Florida house. They had another house in the back there that was tore between the Florida house is there, and that house was sit back there, and then the yellow house. We owned, Sammy and I owned that, and we rented it to Charlie and them. And but we sold it, and because the taxes were so high down there, and then it's a greenhouse. But then my brother-in-law, they had that service station on the corner there, and you could go right in there and get your gas, get the gas there.
Yeah, I remember that one.
Yeah.
He was really special, and I thought a lot of he and your sister too. My daughter Sabrina was not quite 3 years. No, let's see. It happened in March, and she would be 4 in July, coming from Jean's store, the biggest little store in town, it was known as. After we'd had early morning service at church, then that was the thing. Go by Jean's store, get a Coca-Cola or something, and head home. And my sister was visiting with us from Jacksonville. So we go in there and get the drinks and come back out, cross the street, and a lady was driving a car with a cardboard window. So she
that
didn't
see. That was Mary Lee that worked at the former sailor.
Mary Lee Hill.
Mary Lee, yeah. She said if you couldn't grow her, she wouldn't work for anybody that couldn't grow a fig tree. She said something was wrong with them. And she would not, but she worked for Miss Sailor.
But if she hadn't had that cardboard piece of cardboard there for her window, she could have seen Sabrina as she darted across the street and could have stopped because she was going slow. But it was just across the street from where Jean's was, and then the car hit her on one side and caught her and drug her up almost to the corner where Hardy's hardware store. And Harold Jimmy came running out And after we got over and looked and see, he picked her up and carried her upstairs to where Dr. Bailey Dickens' office was. And she was had a gash over here and concussion and all. And he called for the ambulance, not a rescue unit then.
Yeah.
This was 1960.
Yeah.
For the ambulance to come and then take her to Jacksonville.
Mm-hmm.
But I always was so grateful for him because I didn't know what to do. I'm just panicked there.
Right.
My daughter's laying there like that. But she was in a coma like for 2 weeks.
Oh,
but
my goodness.
Woke up just miraculously and had to kind of learn to walk and go and do. And a little bit of the speech was damaged, but first thing she said when she woke up, I want a hamburger.
You're doing bad.
Okay, 2 weeks without food, she wanted a hamburger.
She wanted a hamburger.
But that's kind of special. With me in Melba, and I hadn't really thought a lot about it until just all this 155th year in history and all, but her aunt was one of my second grade teachers, and her brother-in-law, to me, that was just a God moment for him to leave his station unattended, come and minister here, pick this child up, and go up those stairs.
Mm-hmm.
And that's quite a distance.
Yeah, they didn't have any children. Mm-hmm. They had told my sister, you know, that if she ever, she'd have to have bed rest for 9 months if she ever, you know. So he was, you know, because my sister told him, said, Jimmy said, "That's their child. That's not your child."
He was a fine
because he called the cooter, and what cooter wanted, she cooter got.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the Scardos, they had a fruit stand, and they had it on their porch on South 6th Street. It's the 6th and Cedar, I believe it is. And they had the fruit all hanging up like that, the bananas and everything.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. I don't remember that one.
Yeah. And then John the Greek had over by Allen's. He had a store over there too. And Miss McKee had chickens on 8th Street.
Mm-hmm.
She lived out there on 8th Street, and she had chickens. And when we bought our lot out there where we are now, it was shell. And Sammy would go and get the chicken fertilizer and then put sand on it. And so she offered my daughter a little chicken. And so anyway, we told her she could have the little chicken, and she wanted to name it. And she wanted to call it Katie, and that was Miss McKee's name, you know, her name. And I said, I don't know if Miss McKee would like for you to name your chicken Katie. But anyway, at that time, we lived at the Florida house at that time. And so her granddaddy built, and I've got a picture someplace where she's got that chicken in the little basket that her granddaddy converted her a little bicycle. And so anyway, when we moved out in the house, we built the house from payday to payday, and when we got through with it, it was paid for.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't the best house, and it wasn't the biggest house, but it was paid for.
Mm-hmm.
And so Miss Taylor and them kept Katie for us, and I don't know what happened to Katie later on.
Uh-oh.
But anyway,
yum,
Katie
yum.
Got out one time, and John got the chicken. So somebody told Mr. Saylor that Katie, the chicken, was over at John's over there back of his store. He had it in a pen. So he went over there and he asked John about it. And he said, oh, no, that's not. And the man who worked for him, Mr. Saylor, went back there and said, Katie. Chicken started coming to him. And the man said, you just as well to give him that. That's his chicken.
Interesting.
Well, I appreciate you ladies being here.
We don't talk
crap.
No. We talk too much.
No, not at all. I hate to keep you, you know,
yeah.
I'm getting a little bit tired. But the story's been great. I mean, I've learned a lot. I don't know if you have, but I have. So I really appreciate both of y'all being here. And
We swear on our hand that as far as we know, that this is the truth.
That's
the truth.
Don't hold
us to it.
I noticed that the museum is kind of helping with the Friends of the Library thing with the storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
That is interesting. I'm glad they're doing that.
Yeah.
We've been to Jonesboro, Tennessee, and they have an international story time, storytelling time, the first weekend in October.
Oh.
And thousands of people come there.
Mm.
That town has grown
because
of that storytelling.
Mm.
Most interesting stories, kind of like people like you that just can sit
and just tell
a story.
I know. I did. You made my job easy. I didn't hardly have to do anything.
Yeah.
Just sit here and listen. So,
and that's only the beginning.
I know.
Janice Sintel, it used to be, she was, we went, I told you, we went to Douglas.
Yeah.
And well, Janice was Debbie, Jimmy's wife's teacher.
And she's a sister to Gail Lee.
And I told Debbie, about Janice's sister, about Gail having to stay with him, afraid that he's going to fall. That's what they said, you know.
But their stepdad, Sintel, had, where the marina is, was Sintel's restaurant at one time. Remember that?
They lived, Effie and Sintel lived at the Bloodhouse. Everybody in Fernandina, a bunch of people lived. The Fussell lived there, and Sweat lived there, and I mean, just, people.
If they worked at Container, if they were single boys.
Oh, and that was what I forgot to tell about the Craft Village, houses. When the mill came in, they built the houses out there, and so many people lived out. Aline Kittrell and Faye Justice, and I don't know who all lived out there.
Jean Smith and
Dorothy. Yeah, y'all
Smith.
Lived out there. And,
and where was that at?
At CCA, when CCA came in.
It's and between 8th Street and 14th Street.
Yeah, where they've got those cars. Cars.
All those little houses in there.
Yeah, and this out on 8th Street there, across on the left-hand side there where that service station is, Dr. Bunker had little houses built, little tiny houses, and, well, it's kind of like a little motel thing in there. And Dorothy Dugan, Ernestine's sister and them, they lived there. And Dorothy used to walk from there to town. And she had they used to have those riding pants that was a fad that they had riding horse that they rode the horses with, but the girls bought them, and she used to have a pair, and she'd have those on walking to town.
Mm-hmm.
And then Miss Martin had that service station, and she had chicken coops, and she rented those chicken coops out to people.
To live in?
Well, to work over there in the mill. She sure
that
did.
The mill came, I think, 1939 or something like that.
Well, it was when I was staying with Aunt Alice when they broke ground. It was when I was about in high school, so it had been about 39 when they broke ground, I imagine, 1939 or 38 or something. It'd be about 38, 37, 38, I imagine.
When I was in second grade, we were here just for that one year. One of Mama's brothers was working here, so the word gets back to the family in Georgia that there's work there, so that's where my dad came.
Yeah.
But just that one year was all he worked. He wanted to go back to Georgia to find something else, you know. But then we came back in the sixth grade and kind of picked up where we left off.
Well, they had a rumor going around the mill teasing about Leo Edwards. They said Miss Freeman rented Hazel's bedroom out to Leo Edwards. But Leo was on shift work, and one time Hazel came home from work. She worked at the telephone office, too, and I worked at the telephone office, and said that Hazel went to go to bed. Oh. Leo was Leo was in the bed, and that's how she met him.
Oh,
that was a rumor.
That might be good. She's not here, nor he's not here. To answer that.
Well, when we listen to this, we hope it's right.
I say, how did I get in on that?
Okay. All right.
So that's interesting.
Well, it was all been very interesting. Thank you very much. And I'm going to stop the recording now.
Okay. So. Maybe it was turned.